There they halted and dwelt a while beyond the river Gellion. Of Thingol and Melian. Melian was a Maia of the race of the Valar. She dwelt in the gardens of Lorien, and among all his people there were none more beautiful than Melian, nor more wise, nor more skilled in songs of enchantment. It is told that the Valar would leave their works, and the birds of Valinor their mirth, that the bells of Valmar were silent, and the fountains ceased to flow, when, at the mingling of the lights, Melian sang in Lorien. Nightingales went always with her, and she taught them their song, and she loved the deep shadows of the great trees. She was akin, before the world was made, to Yavanna herself, and in that time when the Quendi awoke beside the waters of Cui Vienen, she departed from Valinor and came to the Hither Lands. And there she filled the silence of Middle-earth before the dawn with her voice and the voices of her birds. Now when their journey was near its end, as has been told, the people of the Teleri rested long in East Beleriand, beyond the river Gellion. And at that time, many of the Noldor still lay to the westward, in those forests that were afterwards named Neldoreth and Region. Elwë, lord of the Teleri, went often through the great woods to seek out Finwë, his friend, in the dwellings of the Noldor. And it chanced on a time that he came alone to the starlit wood of Nan Elmath, and there suddenly he heard the song of nightingales. Then an enchantment fell on him, and he stood still. And afar off, beyond the voices of the Lomalindi, he heard the voice of Melian, and it filled all his heart with wonder and desire. He forgot then utterly all his people and all the purposes of his mind, and following the birds under the shadow of the trees, he passed deep into Nan Elmath and was lost. But he came at last to a glade open to the stars, and there Melian stood. And out of the darkness he looked at her, and the light of Aman was in her face. She spoke no word, but being filled with love, Elwë came to her and took her hand, and straightway a spell was laid on him, so that they stood thus while long years were measured by the wheeling stars above them, and the trees of Nan Elmath grew tall and dark before they spoke any word. Thus Elwë's folk who sought him found him not, and Olwë took the kingship of the Teleri, and departed, as is told hereafter. Elwë Singolo came never again across the sea to Valinor, so long as he lived, and Melian returned not thither while their realm together lasted. But of her there came among both elves and men a strain of the Ainur who were with Iluvatar before Ea. In after days he became a king renowned, and his people were all the Eldar of Beleriand. The Sindar they were named, the Grey Elves, the Elves of the Twilight. And King Greymantle was he, Elu Thingol, in the tongue of that land. And Melian was his queen, wiser than any child of Middle-earth, and their hidden halls were in Menegroth, the Thousand Caves in Doriath. Great power Melian lent to Thingol, who was himself great among the Eldar, for he alone of all the Sindar had seen with his own eyes the trees in the day of their flowering, and king though he was of Umanyar, he was not accounted among the Mori Quendi, but with the Elves of the Light mighty upon Middle-earth. And of the love of Thingol and Melian there came into the world the fairest of all the children of Iluvatar that was or shall ever be. Of Eldamar and the Princes of the Eldalia. In time, the hosts of the Vanyar and the Noldor came to the last western shores of the Hither Lands. In the north, these shores in the ancient days after the Battle of the Powers bent ever westward, until in the northernmost parts of Arda only a narrow sea divided Aman, upon which Valinor was built, from the hither lands. But this narrow sea was filled with grinding ice, because of the violence of the frosts of Melkor. Therefore, Orome did not lead the hosts of the Elder Lir into the far north, but brought them to the fair lands about the river Sirion, that afterwards were named Beleriand. And from those shores whence first the Eldar looked in fear and wonder on the sea, there stretched an ocean wide and dark and deep, between them and the mountains of Aman. Now Ulmo, by the counsel of the Valar, came to the shores of Middle-earth and spoke with the Eldar who waited there, gazing on the dark waves. And because of his words on the music which he made for them on his horns of shell, their fear of the sea was turned rather to desire. Therefore Ulmo uprooted an island which long had stood alone amid the sea, far from either shore since the tumults of the fall of Iluin. And with the aid of his servants he moved it, as it were, a mighty ship, and anchored it in the bay of Balar, into which Sirion poured his water. Then the Vanyar and the Noldor embarked upon that isle, and were drawn over the sea, and came at last to the long shores beneath the mountains of Aman, and they entered Valinor, and were welcomed to its bliss. But the eastern horn of the island, which was deep grounded in the shoals off the mouths of Sirion, was broken asunder and remained behind, and that, it is said, was the Isle of Balar, to which afterwards Asa often came. But the Teleri remained still in Middle-earth, for they dwelt in East Beleriand, far from the sea, and they heard not the summons of Ulmo until too late. And many searched still for Elwë, their lord, and without him they were unwilling to depart. But when they learned that Ingwë and Finwë and their peoples were gone, then many of the Teleri pressed on to the shores of Beleriand, and dwelt thereafter near the mouths of Sirion, in longing for their friends that had departed. And they took Olwë, Elwë's brother, to be their king. Long they remained by the coasts of the western sea, and Asse and Uinen came to them and befriended them. And Asse instructed them, sitting upon a rock near to the margin of the land, and of him they learned all manner of sea lore and sea music. Thus it came to be that the Teleri, who were from the beginning lovers of water and the fairest singers of all the elves, were after enamoured of the seas, and their songs were filled with the sound of waves upon the shore. When many years had passed, Ulmo hearkened to the prayers of the Noldor and of Finwë, their king, who grieved at their long sundering from the Teleri, and besought him to bring them to Aman, if they would come. And most of them proved now willing indeed. But great was the grief of Asse when Ulmo returned to the coasts of Beleriand to bear them away to Valinor, for his care was for the seas of Middle-earth and the shores of the Hitherlands, and he was ill-pleased that the voices of the Teleri should be heard no more in his domain. Some he persuaded to remain, and those were the Falathrim, the elves of the Falas, who in after days had dwellings at the havens of Brithumbar and Eglarest, the first mariners in Middle-earth, and the first makers of ships. Círdan, the shipwright, was their lord. The kinsfolk and friends of Elwë Singolo also remained in the Hitherlands, seeking him yet, though they would fain have departed to Valinor and the light of the trees, if Ulmo and Olwë had been willing to tarry longer. But Olwë would be gone, and at last the main host of the Teleri embarked upon the isle, and Ulmo drew them far away. Then the friends of Elwë were left behind, and they called themselves Eglath, the Forsaken People. They dwelt in the woods and hills of Beleriand, rather than by the sea, which filled them with sorrow. But the desire of Aman was ever in their hearts. But when Elwë awoke from his long trance, he came forth from Nan Elmoth with Melian, and they dwelt thereafter in the woods in the midst of the land. Greatly though he had desired to see again the light of the trees, in the face of Melian he beheld the light of Ammon, as in an unclouded mirror, and in that light he was content. His people gathered about him in joy, and they were amazed, for fair and noble as he had been, now he appeared, as it were, a lord of the Maya, his hair as grey silver, tallest of all the children of Iluvatar, and a high doom was before him. Now Osse followed after the host of Olwe, and when they were come to the bay of Eldamar, which is Elvenholm, he called to them, and they knew his voice, and begged Ulmo to stay their voyage. And Ulmo granted their request, and at his bidding Osse made fast the island and rooted it to the foundations of the sea. Ulmo did this the more readily, for he understood the hearts of the Teleri. And in the council of the Valar he had spoken against the summons, thinking that it were better for the Quendi to remain in Middle-earth. The Valar were little pleased to learn what he had done, and Finwë grieved when the Teleri came not, and yet more when he learned that Elwë was forsaken, and knew that he should not see him again unless it were in the halls of Mandos. But the island was not moved again, and stood there alone in the bay of Eldamar, and it was called Tol Ereseia, the Lonely Isle. There the Teleri abode as they wished under the stars of heaven, and yet within sight of Ammon and the deathless shore. And by that long sojourn apart in the Lonely Isle was caused the sundering of their speech from that of the Vanyar and the Noldor. To these the Valar had given a land and a dwelling place. Even among the radiant flowers of the tree-lit gardens of Valinor they longed still at times to see the stars, and therefore a gap was made in the great walls of the Pelori. And there in a deep valley that ran down to the sea the Eldar raised a high green hill. Tuna it was called. From the west the light of the trees fell upon it, and its shadow lay ever eastward, and to the east it looked towards the bay of Elvenholm, and the lonely isle, and the shadowy seas. Then through the Kalakiria, the pass of light, the radiance of the blessed realm streamed forth, kindling the dark waves to silver and gold, and it touched the lonely isle, and its western shore grew green and fair. There bloomed the first flowers that ever were east of the mountains of Ammon. Upon the crown of Tuna, the city of the elves was built, the white walls and terraces of Tirion. And the highest of the towers of that city was the tower of Ingwe, Mindon Eldalieva, whose silver lamp shone far out into the mists of the sea. Few are the ships of mortal men that have seen its slender beam. In Tirion, upon Tuna, the Vanyar and the Noldor dwelt long in fellowship. And since of all things in Valinor they loved most the white tree, Yavanna made for them a tree like to a lesser image of Telperion, save that it did not give light of its own being. Galathilion it was named in the Sindarin tongue. This tree was planted in the courts beneath the Mindon, and there flourished, and its seedlings were many in Eldamar. Of these one was afterwards planted in Tol Ereseia, and it prospered there, and was named Celeborn. Thence came in the fullness of time, as is elsewhere told, Nimloth, the white tree of Numenor. Manwë and Varda loved most the Vanyar, the fair elves. But the Noldor were beloved of Aule, and he and his people came often among them. Great became their knowledge and their skill, yet even greater was their thirst for more knowledge, and in many things they soon surpassed their teachers. They were changeful in speech, for they had great love of words, and sought ever to find names more fit for all things that they knew or imagined. And it came to pass that the masons of the house of Finwë, quarrying in the hills after stone, for they delighted in the building of high towers, first discovered the earth gems, and brought them forth in countless myriads. And they devised tools for the cutting and shaping of gems, and carved them in many forms. They hoarded them not, but gave them freely, and by their labour enriched all Valinor. The Noldor afterwards came back to Middle-earth, and this tale tells mostly of their deeds. Therefore the names and kinship of their princes may here be told, in that form which these names later bore in the tongue of the elves of Beleriand. Finwë was king of the Noldor. The sons of Finwë were Feanor and Fingolfin and Finarfin, but the mother of Feanor was Miriel Serinde, whereas the mother of Fingolfin and Finarfin was Indis of the Vanyar. Feanor was the mightiest in skill of word and of hand, more learned than his brothers. His spirit burned as a flame. Fingolfin was the strongest, the most steadfast, and the most valiant. Finarfin was the fairest and the most wise of heart, and afterwards he was a friend of the sons of Olwë, lord of the Teleri, and had to wife Eawyn, the swan maiden of Al-Qualandë, Olwë's daughter. The seven sons of Feanor were Maedhros the Tall, Maglor the Mighty Singer, whose voice was heard far over land and sea, Celegorm the Fair, and Caranthia the Dark, Corufin the Crafty, who inherited most of his father's skill of hand, and the youngest, Amrod and Amras, who were twin brothers alike in mood and face. In later days they were great hunters in the woods of Middle-earth, and a hunter also was Celegorm, who in Valinor was a friend of Orime, and often followed the Vala's horn. The sons of Fingolfin were Fingon, who was afterwards king of the Noldor in the north of the world, and Turgon, lord of Gondolin. Their sister was Arathel the White. She was younger in the years of the Eldar than her brothers, and when she was grown to full stature and beauty, she was tall and strong, and loved much to ride and hunt in the forests. There she was often in the company of the sons of Feanor, her kin, but to none was her heart's love given. Arfeniel she was called, the White Lady of the Noldor, for she was pale, though her hair was dark, and she was never arrayed but in silver and white. The sons of Finarfin were Finrod the Faithful, who was afterwards named Felagund, Lord of Caves, Orodreth, Angrod, and Eignor. These four were as close in friendship with the sons of Fingolfin as though they were all brothers. A sister they had, Galadriel, most beautiful of all the house of Finwë. Her hair was lit with gold as though it had caught in a mesh the radiance of Laurelin. Here must be told how the Teleri came at last to the land of Aman. Through a long age they dwelt in Tol Eressëa, but slowly their hearts were changed, and were drawn towards the light that flowed out over the sea to the lonely isle. They were torn between the love of the music of the waves upon their shores, and the desire to see again their kindred, and to look upon the splendour of Valinor. But in the end, desire of the light was the stronger. Therefore Ulmo, submitting to the will of the Valar, sent to them Osse, their friend. And he, though grieving, taught them the craft of shipbuilding. And when their ships were built, he brought them as his parting gift many strong-winged swans. Then the swans drew the white ships of the Teleri over the windless sea, and thus at last and latest they came to Aman and the shores of Eldamar. There they dwelt, and if they wished, they could see the light of the trees, and could tread the golden streets of Valmar, and the crystal stairs of Tirion upon Tunar, the green hill. But most of all, they sailed in their swift ships on the waters of the Bay of Elvenhome, or walked in the waves upon the shore, with their hair gleaming in the light beyond the hill. Many jewels the Noldor gave them, opals and diamonds and pale crystals, which they strewed upon the shores and scattered in the pools. Marvellous were the beaches of Elende in those days. And many pearls they won for themselves from the sea, and their halls were of pearl, and of pearl were the mansions of Olwë, at Al-Qualandë, the haven of the swans, lit with many lamps. For that was their city, and the haven of their ships. And those were made in the likeness of swans, with beaks of gold, and eyes of gold and jet. The gate of that harbour was an arch of living rock, sea-carved, and it lay upon the confines of Eldamar, north of the Kalakiria, where the light of the stars was bright and clear. As the ages passed, the Vanyar grew to love the land of the Valar and the full light of the trees, and they forsook the city of Tirion upon Tuna, and dwelt thereafter upon the mountain of Manwe, or about the plains and woods of Valinor, and became sundered from the Noldor. But the memory of Middle-earth under the stars remained in the hearts of the Noldor, and they abode in the Kalakiria, and in the hills and valleys within sound of the western sea. And though many of them went often about the land of the Valar, making far journeys in search of the secrets of land and water and all living things, yet the peoples of Tuna and Al-Qualondë drew together in those days. Finwë was king in Tirion, and Olwë in Al-Qualondë, but Ingwë was ever held the high king of all the elves. He abode thereafter at the feet of Manwë upon Tani Quetil. Feanor and his sons abode seldom in one place for long, but travelled far and wide upon the confines of Valinor, going even to the borders of the dark and the cold shores of the outer sea, seeking the unknown. Often they were guests in the halls of Aule, but Celegorm went rather to the house of Orome, and there he got great knowledge of birds and beasts and all their tongues he knew. For all living things that are or have been in the kingdom of Arda, save only the fell and evil creatures of Melkor, lived then in the land of Aman. And there also were many other creatures that have not been seen upon Middle-earth, and perhaps never now shall be, since the fashion of the world was changed. Of Feanor and the Unchaining of Melkor. Now the three kindreds of the Eldar were gathered at last in Valinor, and Melkor was chained. This was the noontide of the blessed realm, the fullness of its glory and its bliss, long in tale of years, but in memory too brief. In those days the Eldar became full-grown in stature of body and of mind, and the Noldor advanced ever in skill and knowledge, and the long years were filled with their joyful labours, in which many new things, fair and wonderful, were devised. Then it was that the Noldor first bethought them of letters, and Rumil of Tirion was the name of the lore-master who first achieved fitting signs for the recording of speech and song, some for graving upon metal or in stone, others for drawing with brush or with pen. In that time was born in Eldamar, in the house of the king in Tirion upon the crown of Tuna, the eldest of the sons of Finwë, and the most beloved, Curufinwë was his name. But by his mother he was called Feanor, Spirit of Fire, and thus he is remembered in all the tales of the Noldor. Miriel was the name of his mother, who was called Serinde, because of her surpassing skill in weaving and needlework. For her hands were more skilled to fineness than any hands even among the Noldor. The love of Finwë and Miriel was great and glad, for it began in the blessed realm in the days of bliss. But in the bearing of her son, Miriel was consumed in spirit and body, and after his birth she yearned for release from the labour of living. And when she had named him, she said to Finwë, "Never again shall I bear child, for strength that would have nourished the life of many has gone forth into Feanor." Then Finwë was grieved, for the Noldor were in the youth of their days, and he desired to bring forth many children into the bliss of Aman. And he said, "Surely there is healing in Aman. Here all weariness can find rest." But when Miriel languished still, Finwë sought the counsel of Manwë, and Manwë delivered her to the care of Irmo in Lorien. At their parting, for a little while, as he thought, Finwë was sad, for it seemed an unhappy chance that the mother should depart and miss the beginning at least of the childhood days of her son. "It is indeed unhappy," said Muriel, "and I would weep if I were not so weary. But hold me blameless in this, and in all that may come after." She went then to the gardens of Lorien and lay down to sleep. But though she seemed to sleep, her spirit indeed departed from her body and passed in silence to the halls of Mandos. The maidens of Este tended the body of Muriel, and it remained unwithered, but she did not return. Then Finwë lived in sorrow, and he went often to the gardens of Lorien, and sitting beneath the silver willows beside the body of his wife, he called her by her names. But it was unavailing, and alone in all the blessed realm he was deprived of joy. After a while, he went to Lorien no more. All his love he gave thereafter to his son, and Feanor grew swiftly, as if a secret fire were kindled within him. He was tall and fair of face and masterful, his eyes piercingly bright, and his hair raven dark. In the pursuit of all, his purposes eager and steadfast. Few ever changed his course by counsel, none by force. He became of all the Noldor, then or after, the most subtle in mind and the most skilled in hand. In his youth, bettering the work of Rumil, he devised those letters which bear his name, and which the Eldar used ever after. And he it was who, first of the Noldor, discovered how gems greater and brighter than those of the earth might be made with skill. The first gems that Feanor made were white and colourless, but being set under starlight, they would blaze with blue and silver fires brighter than Helluin. And other crystals he made also, wherein things far away could be seen small but clear, as with the eyes of the eagles of Manwë. Seldom were the hands and mind of Feanor at rest. While still in his early youth, he wedded Nerdanel, the daughter of a great smith named Martan, among those of the Noldor most dear to Aule. And of Martan he learned much of the making of things in metal and in stone. Nerdanel also was firm of will, but more patient than Feanor, desiring to understand minds rather than to master them, and at first she restrained him when the fire of his heart grew too hot. But his later deeds grieved her, and they became estranged. 7 sons she bore to Feanor. Her mood she bequeathed in part to some of them, but not to all. Now it came to pass that Finwë took as his second wife Indis the Fair. She was a Vanya, close kin of Ingwe the High King, golden-haired and tall, and in all ways unlike Muriel. Finwë loved her greatly and was glad again. But the shadow of Muriel did not depart from the house of Finwë, nor from his heart. And of all whom he loved, Feanor had ever the chief share of his thought. The wedding of his father was not pleasing to Feanor, and he had no great love for Indis, nor for Fingolfin and Finarfin, her sons. He lived apart from them, exploring the land of Amon, or busying himself with the knowledge and the crafts in which he delighted. In those unhappy things which later came to pass, and in which Feanor was the leader, many saw the effect of this breach within the house of Finwë. Judging that if Finwë had endured his loss and been content with the fathering of his mighty son, the courses of Feanor would have been otherwise, and great evil might have been prevented. For the sorrow and the strife in the house of Finwë is graven in the memory of the Noldorin elves. But the children of Indis were great and glorious, and their children also, and if they had not lived, the history of the Eldar would have been diminished. Now even while Feanor and the craftsmen of the Noldor worked with delight, foreseeing no end to their labours, and while the sons of Indis grew to their full stature, the noontide of Valinor was drawing to its close. For it came to pass that Melkor, as the Valar had decreed, completed the term of his bondage, dwelling for 3 ages in the duress of Mandos alone. At length, as Manwë had promised, he was brought again before the thrones of the Valar. Then he looked upon the glory and their bliss, and envy was in his heart. He looked upon the children of Ilúvatar that sat at the feet of the mighty, and hatred filled him. He looked upon the wealth of bright gems, and he lusted for them. But he hid his thoughts, and postponed his vengeance. Before the gates of Valmar, Melkor abased himself at the feet of Manwë, and sued for pardon, vowing that if he might be made only the least of the free people of Valinor, he would aid the Valar in all their works, and most of all, in the healing of the many hurts that he had done to the world. And Nienna aided his prayer, but Mandos was silent. Then Manwë granted him pardon. But the Valar would not yet suffer him to depart beyond their sight and vigilance, and he was constrained to dwell within the gates of Valmar. But fair-seeming were all the words and deeds of Melkor in that time, and both the Valar and the Eldar had profit from his aid and counsel, if they sought it. And therefore, in a while, he was given leave to go freely about the land. And it seemed to Manwë that the evil of Melkor was cured. For Manwë was free from evil, and could not comprehend it. And he knew that in the beginning, in the thought of Ilúvatar, Melkor had been even as he, and he saw not to the depths of Melkor's heart, and did not perceive that all love had departed from him for ever. But Ulmo was not deceived, and Tulkas clenched his hands whenever he saw Melkor, his foe, go by. For if Tulkas is slow to wrath, he is slow also to forget. But they obeyed the judgment of Manwë, for those who will defend authority against rebellion must not themselves rebel. Now in his heart Melkor most hated the Eldar, both because they were fair and joyful, and because in them he saw the reason for the arising of the Valar and his own downfall. Therefore, all the more did he feign love for them and seek their friendship, and he offered them the service of his lord and labour in any great deed that they would do. The Vanyar indeed held him in suspicion, for they dwelt in the light of the trees and were content, and to the Teleri he gave small heed, thinking them of little worth, tools too weak for his designs. But the Noldor took delight in the hidden knowledge that he could reveal to them, and some hearkened to words that it would have been better for them never to have heard. Melkor indeed declared afterwards that Feanor had learned much art from him in secret, and had been instructed by him in the greatest of all his works. But he lied in his lust and his envy, for none of the Eldalir ever hated Melkor more than Feanor, son of Finwë, who first named him Morgoth. And snared though he was in the webs of Melkor's malice against the Valar, he held no converse with him and took no counsel from him. For Feanor was driven by the fire of his own heart only, working ever swiftly and alone. And he asked the aid and sought the counsel of none that dwelt in Aman, great or small, save only, and for a little while, of Nerdanel the Wise, his wife. Of the Silmarils and the Unrest of the Noldor. In that time were made those things that afterwards were most renowned of all the works of the elves. For Feanor, being come to his full might, was filled with a new thought, or it may be that some shadow of foreknowledge came to him of the doom that drew near, and he pondered how the light of the trees, the glory of the blessed realm, might be preserved imperishable. Then he began a long and secret labour, and he summoned all his lore and his powers, and his subtle skill, and at the end of all he made the Silmarils. As 3 great jewels they were in form. But not until the end, when Feanor shall return, who perished ere the sun was made, and sits now in the halls of awaiting, and comes no more among his kin. Not until the sun passes and the moon falls, shall it be known of what substance they were made. Like the crystal of diamonds it appeared, and yet was more strong than adamant, so that no violence could mar it or break it within the kingdom of Arda. Yet that crystal was to the Silmarils but as is the body to the children of Iluvata, the house of its inner fire that is within it, and yet in all parts of it, and is its life. And the inner fire of the Silmarils Feanor made of the blended light of the trees of Valinor, which lives in them yet, though the trees have long withered and shine no more. Therefore, even in the darkness of the deepest treasury, the Silmarils of their own radiance shone like the stars of Varda. And yet, as were they indeed living things, they rejoiced in light and received it, and gave it back in hues more marvelous than before. All who dwelt in Aman were filled with wonder and delight at the work of Feanor. And Varda hallowed the Silmarils, so that thereafter no mortal flesh, nor hands unclean, nor anything of evil will might touch them, but it was scorched and withered. And Mandos foretold that the fates of Arda, earth, sea, and air lay locked within them. The heart of Feanor was fast bound to these things that he himself had made. Then Melkor lusted for the Silmarils, and the very memory of their radiance was a gnawing fire in his heart. From that time forth, inflamed by this desire, he sought ever more eagerly how he should destroy Feanor and end the friendship of the Valar and the Elves. But he dissembled his purposes with cunning, and nothing of his malice could yet be seen in the semblance that he wore. Long was he at work, and slow at first, and barren was his labour. But he that sows lies in the end shall not lack of a harvest, and soon he may rest from toil indeed, while others reap and sow in his stead. Ever Melkor found some ears that would hear him, and some tongues that would enlarge what they had heard. And his lies passed from friend to friend, as secrets of which the knowledge proves the teller wise. Bitterly did the Noldor atone for the folly of their open ears in the days that followed after. When he saw that many leaned towards him, Melkor would often walk among them, and amid his fair words others were woven, so subtly, that many who heard them believed in recollection that they arose from their own thought. Visions he would conjure in their hearts of the mighty realms that they could have ruled at their own will, in power and freedom in the east, and then whispers went abroad that the Valar had brought the Eldar to Aman because of their jealousy, fearing that the beauty of the Quendi and the Maker's power that Iluvata had bequeathed to them would grow too great for the Valar to govern, as the elves waxed and spread over the wide lands of the world. In those days, moreover, though the Valar knew indeed of the coming of men that were to be, the elves as yet knew naught of it, for Manwë had not revealed it to them. But Melkor spoke to them in secret of mortal men, seeing how the silence of the Valar might be twisted to evil. Little he knew yet concerning men, for engrossed with his own thought in the music, he had paid small heed to the third theme of Iluvata. But now the whisper went among the elves that Manwë held them captive, so that men might come and supplant them in the kingdoms of Middle-earth. For the Valar saw that they might more easily sway this short-lived and weaker race, defrauding the elves of the inheritance of Iluvata. Small truth was there in this, and little have the Valar ever prevailed to sway the wills of men, but many of the Noldor believed, or half-believed, the evil words. Thus, ere the Valar were aware, the peace of Valinor was poisoned. The Noldor began to murmur against them, and many became filled with pride, forgetting how much of what they had and knew came to them in gift from the Valar. Fiercest burned the new flame of desire for freedom and wider realms in the eager heart of Feanor. And Melkor laughed in his secrecy, for to that mark his lies had been addressed, hating Feanor above all and lusting ever for the Silmarils. But these he was not suffered to approach, for though at great feasts Feanor would wear them blazing on his brow, at other times they were guarded close, locked in the deep chambers of his hoard in Tirion. for Feanor began to love the Silmarils with a greedy love, and grudged the sight of them to all save to his father and his 7 sons. He seldom remembered now that the light within them was not his own. High princes were Feanor and Fingolfin, the elder sons of Finwë, honored by all in Aman. But now they grew proud and jealous each of his rights and his possessions. Then Melkor set new lies abroad in Eldamar, and whispers came to Feanor that Fingolfin and his sons were plotting to usurp the leadership of Finwë and of the elder line of Feanor, and to supplant them by the leave of the Valar. For the Valar were ill-pleased that the Silmarils lay in Tirion and were not committed to their keeping. But to Fingolfin and Finarfin it was said, "Beware. Small love has the proud son of Miriel ever had for the children of Indis. Now he has become great, and he has his father in his hand. It will not be long before he drives you forth from Tunar." And when Melkor saw that these lies were smouldering, and that pride and anger were awake among the Noldor, he spoke to them concerning weapons. And in that time the Noldor began the smithying of swords and axes and spears. Shields also they made, displaying the tokens of many houses and kindreds that vied one with another, and these only they wore abroad. And of other weapons they did not speak, for each believed that he alone had received the warning. And Feanor made a secret forge, of which not even Melkor was aware, and there he tempered fell swords for himself and for his sons, and made tall helms with plumes of red. Bitterly did Matan rue the day when he taught to the husband of Nerdanel all the lore of metalwork that he had learned of Aule. Thus with lies and evil whisperings and false counsel, Melkor kindled the hearts of the Noldor to strife. And of their quarrels came at length the end of the high days of Valinor, and the evening of its ancient glory. For Feanor now began openly to speak words of rebellion against the Valar, crying aloud that he would depart from Valinor back to the world without, and would deliver the Noldor from thraldom if they would follow him. Then there was great unrest in Tirion, and Finwë was troubled, and he summoned all his lords to council. But Fingolfin hastened to his halls and stood before him, saying, "King and father, wilt thou not restrain the pride of our brother, Curu Finwë, who is called the Spirit of Fire all too truly? By what right does he speak for all our people as if he were king? Thou it was who long ago spoke before the Quendi, bidding them accept the summons of the Valar to Aman. Thou it was that led the Noldor upon the road through the perils of Middle-earth to the light of Eldamar. If thou dost not now repent of it, 2 sons at least thou hast to honour thy words." But even as Fingolfin spoke, Feanor strode into the chamber, and he was fully armed, his high helm upon his head, and at his side a mighty sword. "So it is, even as I guessed," he said. "My half-brother would be before me with my father in this as in all other matters." Then turning upon Fingolfin, he drew his sword, crying, "Get thee gone and take thy due place." Fingolfin bowed before Finwë, and without word or glance to Feanor, he went from the chamber. But Feanor followed him, and at the door of the king's house he stayed him, and the point of his bright sword he set against Fingolfin's breast. "See, half-brother," he said, "this is sharper than thy tongue. Try but once more to usurp my place and the love of my father, and maybe it will rid the Noldor of one who seeks to be the master of thralls." These words were heard by many, for the house of Finwë was in the great square beneath the Mindon. But again Fingolfin made no answer, and passing through the throng in silence, he went to seek Finarfin, his brother. Now the unrest of the Noldor was not indeed hidden from the Valar, but its seed had been sown in the dark, and therefore, since Feanor first openly spoke against them, they judged that he was the mover of discontent, being eminent in self-will and arrogance, though all the Noldor had become proud. And Manwë was grieved, but he watched and said no word. The Valar had brought the Eldar to their land freely, to dwell or to depart. And though they might judge departure to be folly, they might not restrain them from it. But now the deeds of Feanor could not be passed over, and the Valar were angered and dismayed. And he was summoned to appear before them at the gates of Valmar, to answer for all his words and deeds. There also were summoned all others who had any part in this matter, or any knowledge of it. And Feanor, standing before Mandos in the Ring of Doom, was commanded to answer all that was asked of him. And then at last the root was laid bare, and the malice of Melkor revealed. And straightway Tulkas left the council to lay hands upon him and bring him again to judgment. But Feanor was not held guiltless, for he it was that had broken the peace of Valinor and drawn his sword upon his kinsmen. And Mandos said to him, "Thou speakest of thraldom. If thraldom it be, thou canst not escape it, for Manwë is king of Arda, and not of Aman only, and this deed was unlawful, whether in Aman or not in Aman. Therefore, this doom is now made. For 12 years thou shalt leave Tirion, where this threat was uttered. In that time, take counsel with thyself, and remember who and what thou art. But after that time, this matter shall be set in peace and held redressed if others will release thee." Then Fingolfin said, "I will release my brother." But Feanor spoke no word in answer, standing silent before the Valar. Then he turned and left the council and departed from Valmar. With him into banishment went his 7 sons, and northward in Valinor they made a strong place and treasury in the hills, and there at Forminos a multitude of gems were laid in hoard, and weapons also, and the Silmarils were shut in a chamber of iron. Thither also came Finwë the king, because of the love that he bore to Feanor, and Fingolfin ruled the Noldor in Tirion. Thus the lies of Melkor were made true in seeming. Though Feanor by his own deeds had brought this thing to pass, and the bitterness that Melkor had sown endured, and lived still long afterwards between the sons of Fingolfin and Feanor. Now Melkor, knowing that his devices had been revealed, hid himself, and passed from place to place as a cloud in the hills, and Tulkas sought for him in vain. Then it seemed to the people of Valinor that the light of the trees was dimmed, and the shadows of all standing things grew longer and darker in that time. It is told that for a time Melkor was not seen again in Valinor, nor was any rumour heard of him, until suddenly he came to Forminos and spoke with Feanor before his doors. Friendship he feigned with cunning argument, urging him to his former thought of flight from the trammels of the Valar, and he said, "Behold the truth of all that I have spoken, and how thou art banished unjustly. But if the heart of Feanor is yet free and bold, as were his words in Tirion, then I will aid him, and bring him far from this narrow land. For am I not Valar also? Yea, and more than those who sit in pride in Valimar, and I have ever been a friend to the Noldor, most skilled and most valiant of the people of Arda." Now Feanor's heart was still bitter at his humiliation before Mandos, and he looked at Melkor in silence, pondering if indeed he might yet trust him so far as to aid him in his flight. And Melkor, seeing that Feanor wavered, and knowing that the Silmarils held his heart in thrall, said at the last, "Here is a strong place and well guarded. But think not that the Silmarils will lie safe in any treasury within the realm of the Valar." But his cunning overreached his aim, his words touched too deep, and awoke a fire more fierce than he designed. And Feanor looked upon Melkor with eyes that burned through his fair semblance, and pierced the cloaks of his mind, perceiving there his fierce lust for the Silmarils. Then hate overcame Feanor's fear, and he cursed Melkor and bade him begone, saying, "Get thee gone from my gate, thou jail-crow of Mandos." and he shut the doors of his house in the face of the mightiest of all the dwellers in Ea. Then Melkor departed in shame, for he was himself in peril, and he saw not his time yet for revenge. But his heart was black with anger, and Finwë was filled with great fear, and in haste he sent messengers to Manwë in Valmar. Now the Valar were sitting in council before their gates, fearing the lengthening of the shadows, when the messengers came from Formenos. At once Orome and Tulkas sprang up, but even as they set out in pursuit, messengers came from Eldamar, telling that Melkor had fled through the Kalikiria, and from the hill of Tunnar the elves had seen him pass in wrath as a thundercloud. And they said that thence he had turned northward, for the Teleri in Alqualondë had seen his shadow going by their haven towards Ahriman. Thus Melkor departed from Valinor, and for a while the two trees shone again unshadowed, and the land was filled with light. But the Valar sought in vain for tidings of their enemy, and as a cloud far off that looms ever higher, borne upon a slow, cold wind, a doubt now marred the joy of all the dwellers in Aman, dreading they knew not what evil that yet might come. Of the Darkening of Valinor. When Manwë heard of the ways that Melkor had taken, it seemed plain to him that he purposed to escape to his old strongholds in the north of Middle-earth, and Orome and Tulkas went with all speed northward, seeking to overtake him if they might. But they found no trace or rumour of him beyond the shores of the Teleri, in the unpeopled wastes that drew near to the ice. Thereafter, the watch was redoubled along the northern fences of Aman, but to no purpose. For ere the pursuit set out, Melkor had turned back, and in secrecy passed away far to the south. For he was yet as one of the Valar, and could change his form, or walk unclad, as could his brethren, though that power he was soon to lose for ever. Thus, unseen, he came at last to the dark region of Avathar. That narrow land lay south of the Bay of Eldamar, beneath the eastern feet of the Pelori, and its long and mournful shores stretched away into the south, lightless and unexplored. There, beneath the sheer walls of the mountains and the cold, dark sea, the shadows were deepest and thickest in the world. And there, in Avathar, secret and unknown, Ungoliant made her abode. The Eldar knew not whence she came, but some have said that in ages long before she descended from the darkness that lies about Arda, when Melkor first looked down in envy upon the kingdom of Manwë, and that in the beginning she was one of those that he corrupted to his service. But she had disowned her master, desiring to be mistress of her own lust, taking all things to herself to feed her emptiness. And she fled to the south, escaping the assaults of the Valar and the hunters of Orome, for their vigilance had ever been to the north, and the south was long unheeded. Thence she had crept towards the light of the Blessed Realm, for she hungered for light and hated it. In a ravine she lived, and took shape as a spider of monstrous form, weaving her black webs in a cleft of the mountains. There she sucked up all light that she could find, and spun it forth again in dark nets of strangling gloom, until no light more could come to her abode, and she was famished. Now Melkor came to Avathar, and sought her out, and he put on again the form that he had worn as the tyrant of Utumno, a dark lord, tall and terrible. In that form he remained ever after. There in the black shadows, beyond the sight even of Manwë in his highest halls, Melkor, with Ungoliant, plotted his revenge. But when Ungoliant understood the purpose of Melkor, she was torn between lust and great fear, for she was loath to dare the perils of Aman and the power of the dreadful lords, and she would not stir from her hiding. Therefore Melkor said to her, Do as I bid, and if thou hunger still when all is done, then I will give thee whatsoever thy lust may demand, yea, with both hands. Lightly he made this vow, as he ever did, and he laughed in his heart. Thus did the great thief set his lure for the lesser. A cloak of darkness she wove about them when Melkor and Ungoliant set forth. An unlight, in which things seemed to be no more, and which eyes could not pierce, for it was void. Then slowly she wrought her webs, rope by rope, from cleft to cleft, from jutting rock to pinnacle of stone, ever climbing upwards, crawling and clinging, until at last she reached the very summit of Hyarmentir, the highest mountain in that region of the world, far south of great Taniquetil. There the Valar were not vigilant, for west of the Pelori was an empty land in twilight, and eastward the mountains looked out, save for forgotten Avathar, only upon the dim waters of the pathless sea. But now upon the mountaintop, dark Ungoliant lay, and she made a ladder of woven ropes and cast it down, and Melkor climbed upon it and came to that high place and stood beside her, looking down upon the guarded realm. Below them lay the woods of Oreme, and westward shimmered the fields and pastures of Yavanna, gold beneath the tall wheat of the gods. But Melkor looked north, and saw afar the shining plain and the silver domes of Valmar gleaming in the mingling of the lights of Telperion and Laurelin. Then Melkor laughed aloud, and leapt swiftly down the long western slopes, and Ungoliant was at his side, and her darkness covered them. Now it was a time of festival, as Melkor knew well. Though all tides and seasons were at the will of the Valar, and in Valinor there was no winter of death, nonetheless they dwelt then in the kingdom of Arda, and that was but a small realm in the halls of Ea, whose life is time, which flows ever from the first note to the last chord of Eru. And even as it was then the delight of the Valar, as is told in the Einar Lindela, to clothe themselves as in a vesture in the forms of the children of Iluvatar, so also did they eat and drink, and gather the fruits of Yavanna from the earth which under Eru they had made. Therefore Yavanna set times for the flowering and the ripening of all things that grew in Valinor, and at each first gathering of fruits, Manwë made a high feast for the praising of Eru, when all the peoples of Valinor poured forth their joy in music and song upon Taniquetil. This now was the hour. Manwë decreed a feast more glorious than any that had been held since the coming of the Eldar to Aman. For though the escape of Melkor portended toils and sorrows to come, and indeed none could tell what further hurts would be done to Arda ere he could be subdued again, at this time Manwë designed to heal the evil that had arisen among the Noldor, and all were bidden to come to his halls upon Taniquetil, there to put aside the griefs that lay between their princes, and forget utterly the lies of their enemy. There came the Vanyar, and there came the Noldor of Tirion, and the Maiar were gathered together, and the Valar were arrayed in their beauty and majesty, and they sang before Manwë and Varda in their lofty halls, or danced upon the green slopes of the mountain that looked west towards the trees. In that day the streets of Valmar were empty, and the stairs of Tirion were silent, and all the land lay sleeping in peace. Only the Teleri beyond the mountains still sang upon the shores of the sea, for they recked little of seasons or times, and gave no thought to the cares of the rulers of Arda, or the shadow that had fallen on Valinor, for it had not touched them as yet. One thing only marred the design of Manwë. Feanor came indeed, for him alone Manwë had commanded to come. But Finwë came not, nor any others of the Noldor of Formenos. For said Finwë, While the ban lasts upon Feanor, my son, that he may not go to Tirion, I hold myself unkinged, and I will not meet my people. And Feanor came not in raiment of festival, and he wore no ornament, neither